Welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadikarup, guten tag, jiao wi vi va kat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget Pharmaceutical Kill, Vivisection Prison, Killitary Industrial Corporation, in the cheese-covered post-constitutional, bankster, bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Sam Manella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and I know a lot of people are staying up late in the UK again this week for part two of our discussion. It was a rather heated discussion last week. This week, part two with Tim Barford of VegFest UK and the Vegan Society in the UK, and Professor Gary Francione. And I welcome all new listeners. I've heard from a lot of people in the UK who didn't know that this show existed. We've been broadcasting now for 13 years, and people have been saying, okay, well, I'm going to listen every week now. And actually, you can go to goveganradio.com, and you can catch up on your listening. There are hundreds of free archives there, and you're welcome to listen at your leisure. We talked extensively about Ebola on last week's show and its connection to eating bushmeat and how bushmeat is all over the UK, becoming popular throughout Europe and in the US. So now Ebola. While the world panics about Ebola, and again, remember, we're looking at quarantines and, you know, I mean, this is a disease that kills 1,000 people a year, basically. Of course, and as I remind everyone, the consumption of so-called meat, dairy, fish, and eggs kills, you know, maybe 1 million to 1.5 million people every year in the United States. But we're not quarantining McDevils, Murder King, Wendy's, Kills Jr., KFC, Jack the Ripper in a box. More than all wars combined. So the world is panicking about Ebola, and they are celebrating, though, at Techmira Pharmaceuticals, a biotech corporation in Canada, whose stock surged 45% because it markets the Ebola drug called Techmira Ebola, which the FDA just approved for limited use on infected patients. Techmira already has a $140 million contract with the U.S. Department of Defense Biodefense Unit to develop the Ebola drug. And just not that long ago, we wouldn't even know what Ebola was, right? We thought maybe it was a new car model from Toyota, huh? You know, who gets the job to name new diseases, or for that matter, who gets the job to name pharmaceuticals? You know, all those random syllables just running together. You know, I think that the same people who name pharmaceuticals probably, you know, name car models too. You know, I mean, and who can apply for that job to name a car model? Who does that, huh? What are the job qualifications? What does the resume say? Well, I named two new drugs at Squibb. So anyway, I do want to remind you, if you're up late, you're not thinking, you're in the UK, you're drinking lots of tea to stay awake, and just do want to remind you, you know, want to make sure, did you take your Optima capsules, your Amanti pills? Did you have your Cephea injection today? Oh, of course not. Those are all Kia car models. Oh, and by the way, I should say Go Vegan Radio is looking for a vehicle donation. We would especially appreciate a high-mileage Nissan Humira or Humira, or a four-wheel drive Toyota Avista. That would be nice, right? Or a powerful Ram Tough Affinitor drug, maybe a Mini Cooper Benicar. That would be nice, too. Or a Honda Stellara, perhaps. Or even an Infiniti Pradaxa or Subaru Orencia. If you have one of those, you can don't. I'm sorry, my notes are just so confused here right now. I'm all jumbled. Those are all car models. You know, those were. I mean, those weren't car models. They were pharmaceuticals, of course. They were all pharmaceuticals, as are Elantra, Equus, Versa, Spectra, Matrix. You know, the boil medication, Lancer. Oh, forget it. Those are all car models too. I'm sorry. I just can't get any of this straight here today. So, I was looking to drive a new E. coli, perhaps, or a Mini Salmonella, or go camping in the Subaru Campylobacter. Getting back to the UK, let's see. Where have I just had, sorry to say that I'm all disheveled here because of, we had a technical problem just as we were about to come on air. So I'm just trying to catch up here right now. And, you know, I didn't want you to think that in the UK, you know, you're safe just because you're eating normal body parts of acceptable animals, just as on this side of the pond, we have an ongoing Foster Farms salmonella outbreak. In the UK, The Guardian reported in July an important story. I don't know if you had a chance to read that. The headline was "Revealed: The Dirty Secret of the UK's Poultry Industry." So I had that on my computer screen until we had that little glitch right before going on air. So let me see here if I can get that. Talk amongst yourselves. Talk amongst yourselves. Dirty secret of UK's poultry industry. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit. We will be talking later in the program on the U.S.'s dirty poultry industry, what's happening with the E. coli outbreak. It's continuing. Chickens are a health hazard. In the U.S., we'll be talking to former USDA inspector Lester Friedlander, and he will be not only talking to us about the ongoing Foster Farms debacle and the politics behind it, that's coming up next hour. We're also going to talk about porcine endemic diarrhea virus. Did your bacon have diarrhea? 50 million pigs are being killed in the U.S. Because of this rampant diarrhea disease. And in the UK, the story was revealed the dirty secret of the UK's poultry industry. You know, the chicken flesh is the UK's favorite meat. So isn't that sophisticated? Not eating bush meat, but eating dead birds like that. I mean, that is sophisticated. Let's see here. 2/3 of fresh retail chicken in the UK contaminated with Campylobacter, okay? So that makes 280,000 people in the UK sick every year. So there you have what's going on there, and they were going to name names. The Guardian did a 5-month investigation and uncovered a series of alleged hygiene failings in the chicken industry, the allegations have been made against two of the largest UK poultry processors, Two Sisters Food Group and Fazenda. I thought that was a new Nissan car. No? They relate to two factories owned by two sisters that supply fresh chicken. Can there be such a thing or such a being? I thought all chicken would be dead and decomposing. But okay. So two factories owned by two sisters that supply fresh chicken and chicken for ready meals to Tesco, Asta, Sainsbury's, Aldi, M&S, KFC. Am I pronouncing this right? Am I giving it the proper English accent? Also to farms and slaughterhouses owned by Fresenda, which supplies Asta and Nando's. And so the allegations are that chickens who fall on the floor have repeatedly been put back on the production line at two sisters' sites. The company denies this ever happens and says all chickens from the floor are correctly disposed of as waste. Breakdowns that led to high-risk material, feathers, guts, and offal piling up for hours on separate occasions while production continued at Two Sisters factory in Wales. The company says they did not stop the line because they had to consider the welfare of chickens waiting in crates to be killed. That's right. We can't stop the line because the poor chickens in the crates are, you know, they're uncomfortable. They need to be killed. Another breakdown here led to the water in the scald tanks at the same site not being cleaned for 3 days. So that around 250,000 birds pass through dirty, filthy water after slaughter. The company says this was an isolated incident. Yes, isolated in that they were caught at the time. And it lasted only one day. Bacteria counts were checked and were acceptable. Acceptable to the company. From filth. We eat from filth and expect health from that. Okay. Anyway, coming up, we have Tim Barford and Gary Francione. Next hour, Dr. Lester Friedlander. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Hey, register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You can go to worldvegansummit.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. There are two Bob Linden pages on Facebook, too, that are usually maxed out, but I understand that you can actually follow people on Facebook now, too, so you can do that. You can make a tax-deductible donation to support this radio show at goveganradio.com, where there are hundreds of free archives available for you. And I invite you to check out the World Vegan Summit and Expo, worldvegansummit.com, a most amazing event coming up in March in Southern California, where we're all going to gather and focus our vegan activism so we don't go astray and think that humane meat is the way to go, and it isn't. Again, you can register for that. We have amazing speakers and activities planned and a menu, and we're just about to plant the garden for all the veganic food that we're going to have there. So I invite you to participate in that. It's sad again to note the passing of another good person. We sadly note the passing of David Middlesworth. Terrific guy whose heroic deeds in life included developing V-Dog, the vegan dog food, an important contribution to vegans in our movement to have this choice out there. I mean, there are some vegan dog foods out there now. They're being sold as the non-allergenic choice that you can have, considering what, you know, the sweeping of the slaughterhouse floor that goes into commercial dog foods. And so We thank Dave Middlesworth for V-Dog. Dave died while hiking in Glacier National Park. Condolences to his family, to his grieving wife, Linda, who was married to Dave for 51 years. Holy cow, they got married when I was 11 years old, huh? So, anyway, David will be missed, and you know, I'm missing a number of people now lately, it seems. Rin Berry, Virginia Handley, Dave Middlesworth, Climax, one of my favorite dogs in the world. So I dedicate this story to Dave Middlesworth. This comes from Dogster. And the headline is, "A dog braves miles of traffic to feed her junkyard friends. She walks 4 miles a day in Brazil to get food from a good Samaritan for her clan." And it says, "Lucia Helena de Souza wasn't surprised when a dog showed up in her yard looking for food. That happens a lot in São Carlos, Brazil, and de Souza did what she'd done many times before. She fed the dog, carving out a portion from the batch she makes for her own adopted dogs and cats, which the dog came back the next night and..." She says, it says here, "When the dog came back the next night, she fed her again, putting her food in a plastic bag. And then the dog did something surprising. She stopped eating, picked up the bag of food, and headed back into the night. It happened again and again, and seemed to de Souza that each time the dog had stopped eating before she was full. Quote, I realized that she ate and then shared at what was in the bag," she said in a video made of the duo. De Souza wondered what the dog was up to. So one night, she pulled on her shoes and followed her. It was not a safe trip. They crossed roads in pitch darkness, busy highways, and finally, after 4 miles, ended up at a junkyard. That's where the dog let her plastic bag of food, left her plastic bag of food for all her friends, the animals at the junkyard." Let me see if I can finish up with the story after the break. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, and it is live radio, so you just never quite know what goes on behind the scenes. I wanted to finish up with the story on the dog in Brazil. So basically, the dog Lilica has been doing this 4-mile journey every night through traffic, through heavy traffic, and she shows up at 9 p.m. At this person's house, gets a bag of food, and brings it back to the junkyard. She's been doing this for 3 years. Every night, the dog shows up. She gets a bag of food. She eats some of it, takes it back to the animals living at the junkyard, other dogs, cats, and chickens. So we appreciate those who share their food with dogs. We appreciate Dave Middlesworth and his contribution of V-Dog. Thank you, Dave Middlesworth. So it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. The website, goveganradio.com. I invite you to please register for the World Vegan Summit and Expo, a very important event coming up in March. You can go to the website, worldvegansummit.com, see all the speakers, and, you know, it's a work in progress. There'll be some adjustments to that list, and great activities, great food lined up, many vegan workshops with Professor Gary Francione, who will also be talking about the abolitionist approach. Professor Francione does a weekly commentary on this program, usually next hour, but we're doing it an hour early again this week, so that the folks in the UK only have to stay up till from 1:30 to 2:30 in the morning to hear part two of a discussion we started last week. It turned out to be somewhat of a heated discussion. We had Tim Barford on, who is with VegFest UK and with the Vegan Society in the UK, and he had made some statements regarding veganism and health, which I believe he posted that he was retracting this past week. And I think that we have both Tim and Gary on the line again. Tim, are you with us?
Good evening, all our listeners. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, we didn't hear the beginning there, but we hear you now. How are you today, Tim?
I'm fine, thanks. I'm just saying good evening, Bob. Good evening, Gary. Good evening to all our global listeners. And thank you very much for having me back on today.
Right. Well, thanks for being with us. And we talked about veganism and health last week a little bit. And you thought during the week that you posted a retraction this week. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Or?
Yeah, certainly. We had a very interesting discussion last week. I think the listeners found it a little bit hard to hear all of it. It was quite heated. I felt a little bit like George Groves, actually. Those who don't know who George Groves is, he's a bit of a gobby, cockney prize fighter. Felt like I'd gone 10 rounds with Tyson. But I can assure the listeners today it would be a lot easier, where I think a bit calmer. And indeed, yes, I did retract my Facebook post. I felt it was important to clarify to people and to send out a positive message, because I totally accept that that Facebook comment I met that meant, excuse me, the Facebook comment I made that Gary picked up on, you know, wasn't very helpful.
Right. So, and had anybody been listening to Go Vegan Radio in just the last few weeks? We've had many studies on, many big studies to show a positive connection of veganism and health. Just to quickly mention, we had something from the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health that says you're able to prevent early death by increasing your intake of fruits and vegetables. This was a 7-year study of 65,000 people over the age of 35. Those consuming 7 or more servings of fruits and vegetables daily had a 42% lower risk of dying from any cause than those who ate the fewest fruits and vegetables. High fruit and vegetable consumption appears to decrease the risk of death from cancer by 25%, heart disease by 31%, and just one other, which was was the headline in The Guardian there. Everybody reading The Guardian. Diets high in meat, eggs, and dairy could be as harmful to health as smoking, and that people over 65 who eat a lot of meat, eggs, and dairy are four times as likely to die from cancer or diabetes, the study suggests. And this was an 18-year study of 6,381 people taking part in that survey. And the study also cast doubt on the effects of the Atkins diet, the paleo diets, and talks about the quote in it, the overall harmful effects as seen in the study were almost completely wiped out when the protein came from plant-based sources such as beans and legumes. So we go through these studies all the time. We know that being vegan is healthy. And thank you for joining us again, Tim. And so we're going to I'm going to try to be a moderator and time things out a little better this week. And so we'll have a format where we have a little time for a question and a response, and we'll go back and forth and be able to hear everybody. And welcome again this week, Professor Gary Francione. How are you today?
I'm well, Bob. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
I'm fine.
Good. So let's start, Gary. I think, did you want to start with the first question, and Tim will respond, and then Tim will have questions, and we'll just go back and forth for about the next hour and see what we
have
going.
I'd be happy to, Bob. And let me just say that, you know, I want to go back to something we talked about last week that I think is really important. And if Tim needs more time, we're talking about like each of us having 2 minutes to answer the question. If Tim needs more time to answer this question, then that's perfectly fine with me, Bob.
Okay, Gary, your time is up for asking the question. Tim, okay. Your answer, please. No, only sorry.
My question goes to, you know, we talked about the vegan society with its you don't have to be vegan to love vegan products that have the vegan society trademark. And we talked about Fiona Oakes' comments that veganism isn't for everyone and not probably for many people, and the idea that people who do take veganism seriously are fundamentalist nutters, that sort of thing. I saw two things over the week, Tim, that disturbed me. One was a comment on the VegFest UK London site that in which you said the thrust for this event is geared toward the meat and dairy reducers. This is a quote. Those people who are looking to reduce meat and dairy intake and replace with plant-based options without actually going veggie or vegan. And then I saw something else which troubled me even more, and that was that you had participating in VegFest Bristol something called Part-Time Carnivore. And the quote is, aims to cut consumption of intensely produced meat and unethical meat, is run by a guy named Pete, who according to the site is passionate about environmental issues but loves his meat. And advertises or promotes the idea, how many meaty days a week will you have each week? And this organization participated in VegFest. And Tim, this is the real focus of my concern. We would never say you don't have to be egalitarian to have a friend of color. We would never say feminism is not for everybody and not probably for very many people. We wouldn't promote a women's rights event and say that the main thrust for this event is geared towards those who want to reduce violence towards women without eliminating it entirely. And we wouldn't have someone participate in that who says, well, you know, I'm passionate about reducing violence to women, but I'm still passionate about engaging in violence to women. We would never do that. At least I don't think we would. I wouldn't, and I would assume you wouldn't either. And so that's really what I was wanting to get to most last week, was this idea that we would never do this when humans are concerned. Why is it not just overt speciesism to do it where animals are concerned? That's what I don't understand. Why is it okay to take that position?
Tim, you have the floor.
Okay. Well, that's a very good question. I think it's very interesting to listen to that. It's certainly been a topic now that's on people's minds, and we are discussing between ourselves in this community. What we're saying, really, I think what you're asking there, Gary, is is it right to try and encourage people to reduce things, reduce their meat eating consumption, try and help steps towards maybe going vegan one day a week or going vegetarian one day a week or this kind of thing? Or should we be going completely making it clear that the consumption of animal products in any circumstances at any time is completely unacceptable? Now, I think my own feeling is that nearly all of us who do, for instance, the vegan events, organise the vegan events in the UK, I'm pretty sure we all subscribe to the fact that we would love to see everybody go vegan immediately and adopt this message. And that there's absolutely no question in our minds that any kind of animal abuse is something that's just not acceptable. In the same way as the various other forms of abuse that you listed there, Gary, they're not acceptable. I don't think there's any question of that. I think where we may differ, or indeed we maybe have something to learn, is how we approach this. As an organiser, my big problem is trying to get people interested in the vegan lifestyle at all. We have so few people who are interested in it, but we certainly felt the need to broaden this message to try and attract people into the zone.
Tim, we need to take a break. We'll continue with Tim Barford and Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. We continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We are live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. And you can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden on Facebook. We're continuing our discussion from last week. This week is part two, Professor Gary Francione and Tim Barford of VegFest UK and the UK Vegan Society. And, you know, with all the discomfort of the controversy that's been going on in the past weeks, I feel positive steps are being taken, that we're this self-examination is going on at the Vegan Society. And Tim, you were talking about that just before the break. You want to finish up for about 30 seconds to a minute on this, we were examining whether our policy should endorse reduction of animal products versus, like, getting people to go vegan, right?
Yeah, that's right. So just briefly to finish off there, you know, from experience, we find that about 50 to 200 people leave a VegFest event who've gone vegan. They've come in as eating meat and dairy, etc. They've made a decision to go vegan afterwards. But between 1 and 2,000 people leave who've pledged to change their diet. They want to reduce their meat and dairy. They want to reduce their intake of products. So we feel that the VegFest is serving basically a dual purpose. One is to help people there go vegan, and the other is to help people who, for whatever reason, have rejected that message and that offer or that option to go vegan. We're going to help them take steps to reduce their meat and dairy intake. That's it in a nutshell, really.
Well, I hope that the plan is eventually to... I don't see... there's a message that has to be told, that really every drop of milk or every piece of cheese contains rape, mutilation, imprisonment, and murder.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, you know, reduction... You know, maybe for a week or two, but, you know. So did you have a question for Gary Francione, or do we want to go back to Gary?
Let me just ask Gary, actually, on that interest. Obviously, Gary, you've stood up for for a long time now for animals, and you've earned a great deal of respect for doing so, for putting animals first and demanding their equality, that we view human beings and view animals as equals and not as our property. You stood up for that message for a long time, and over the last few days, having listened to some of my friends who have a very healthy respect for you, I've actually found a little bit more about you, learned to read about you a bit, and I have to say I am very respectful for that stand you've made, and continue to do so. My feeling is, though, however, there's other factors involved too that affect us all, and in no way here do I want to make any kind of level of judgment as to where animals or any of these problems fit in. But surely the big problem that we're all facing right now that isn't going away in a hurry is global warming. And as we know, meat and dairy contribute hugely to global warming. Surely, at this point, what we're facing in history, it's essential to reduce that, the global emissions from livestock. And if we're not, after 30, 40 years, have been able to succeed at getting people to go vegan straight away, surely it's absolutely essential that the next best thing is we help them reduce their meat and dairy to a point where we very much hope that people would decide for themselves to completely give up meat and dairy. So, over to you.
Gary, do you have a response to...
Tim? Yeah, look, I think that when you say that we haven't in 34 years been able to persuade people to go vegan, there has never in the history of the animal movement been in any sort of effort to get people to go vegan. As a matter of fact, most of the organizations talk about vegetarianism if they talk about anything. And what I think we're at a very crucial point right now. And I think what we've been discussing the past week with the Vegan Society is what I've been discussing for 20 years with respect to the animal movement, with respect to all of the large animal welfare organizations. It's basically the position of these organizations.
Gary, I'm sorry. We hear the music. We'll have to continue with your answer after the break. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. Greetings once again, and welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And later this hour, we have Dr. Lester Friedlander, former USDA inspector, to talk about the health hazard that Foster Farms chickens are, and also, did your bacon have diarrhea? You know, there's this diarrhea virus that's killing 50 million pigs in this country. Before the break, we were talking to Tim Barford, who is with VegFest UK and the Vegan Society in the UK, and Professor Gary Francione. Tim posed the question to Gary related to saying that, well, we really haven't had much success in getting people to go vegan over the last 30 or 40 years, so maybe we should try to get people to reduce consumption. And Gary was saying, we haven't really tried over the last 30 or 40 years.
We haven't tried at all, Bob. And I think right now we're facing a crucial issue, and that is, you know, we're seeing it with the Vegan Society, we're seeing it with all of the animal groups in the United States, the United Kingdom, and every place else. They're taking the position, people aren't going to go vegan overnight, so we've got to do something else. My response to that is simple. We ought to make clear that no consumption is morally justifiable. If people wish to do less than go vegan, that ought to be their choice, and never, ever should it be as a result of what we're prompting them or encouraging them to do. I think it's sad if someone comes out of VegFest and says, you know, I met these people at Part-Time Carnivore, and it's really great because, you know, they're saying that what I need to do is to just, you know, reduce my meat, and that that's the morally right thing to do. No, we should never be sending that message, which is why I object to what the Vegan Society is doing. I don't understand why Tim is supporting it, because it's abandoning the principles that were articulated by Donald Watson. It's moving away from the idea of veganism as a moral baseline. It's taking the position articulated by Fiona Oakes that if you regard veganism as a moral baseline, you're a fundamentalist nutter. And it's just making it basically a question of buying products with vegan trademarks on them. That's not what a social justice movement is about. And so that's my answer to Tim. And I hope that Tim will rethink having groups like Part-Time Carnivore at VegFest. And I hope sincerely that Tim will rethink making statements like, what we want to do is get people to reduce without getting them to go vegan or vegetarian. First of all, vegetarianism, forget about vegetarianism.
Right,
but getting
them
to go vegan. How about making it clear that veganism is the only rational response to the recognition that animals have moral status? And if people want to do less, let them choose to do it. Why should we be encouraging them?
Hear, hear. I'm sorry, I showed some favoritism there, but that's my attitude, is that sense of urgency that this is life and death, and that part-time carnivore means part-time rape, part-time mutilation, part-time imprisonment, part-time murder. And Tim, also, you mentioned the need to reduce related to global warming, and I did want to mention that the most credible scientific study comes from the World Bank. People can Google livestock and climate change. Animal agriculture is blamed for 51%, at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. And so the solution, as suggested by the World Bank, is that we need a massive shift to veganism immediately. And people have to understand that if they're consuming any animal products, they're part of the climate change problem. And going vegan is the only solution, because if we were to change our energy infrastructure, it would take at least 18 to 20 years and $18 to $20 trillion. So the only solution is a mass movement toward going vegan, and that sense of urgency for the climate, as well as for the animals, as well as for human health. Tim, what do you have to say for yourself, Tim Barford?
Yeah, you know what? I agree. It's a pressing urgency. From my understanding, though, that if we can just, for sake of argument here, just put the animals area to one side. I know I'm going to get in trouble for that, but I'm trying to make a little point here. If we're talking about global warming, and as you've rightly pointed out, Bob, it's an alarming, horrendous, very inconvenient truth that, you know, livestock farming is almost undoubtedly, I'm not a scientist, but everything seems to point that, you know, animal livestock farming is the biggest contribution to global warming. However, if we were to cut our, if say, for instance, 80% of the UK went 80% vegan this year, on a global warming level, this would be a huge impact. Well, maybe it wouldn't be a huge impact, but it would be a big, big shift. This would be the shift towards mass veganism. Now, I accept that 80% is not veganism. When it comes to health, 80% vegan lifestyle is going to be a massive improvement than, say, a 20% vegan lifestyle on your own health. For the environment, an 80% vegan lifestyle is going to be a big, big step towards reducing greenhouse emissions than if you're on a 20% vegan diet. For global food sustainability production, if we're all on an 80% vegan diet, that would have a massively positive impact on our global food solution. For animals, there would still be this 20% that is unacceptable. That's no question about that. However, what I'm saying, and I think a lot of people are saying, is that we've tried hard to get people to go vegan. We've had some successes over 34 years. I disagree with Gary saying that we haven't tried it. Most of the UK groups, animal groups, all have a very, very, very strong vegan agenda that they've been quietly pushing away for a long time now.
I hope not quietly. Maybe that's why.
I'm going to finish up then. My feeling is that for the planet right now to go vegan is almost impossible. But for the planet right now to go 80% vegan, that is really within our grasp. And that's why we're heading towards that. Because we feel that we can successfully
achieve it. I'm not an environmentalist, Tim. Okay. I'm an environmental scientist. I'm an animal ethicist. But it seems to me it's the exact same argument. That is, we need veganism for lots of reasons. For justice for non-humans. We need it for human health because as our generation, you know, as my generation gets older, we're going to bankrupt the healthcare system as the baby boomer generation moves towards a death. And environmentally, we need to be moving towards veganism. But the message should be on all fronts that veganism is the only rational thing to do as a matter of interspecies justice, as a matter of human health, as a matter of environmental concern and sanity. But the idea that we should be promoting less than veganism in any of those contexts strikes me as being counterproductive. And what we're doing, when you know, what sort of message gets sent to young people, Tim, who come to VegFest and run into people like Part-Time Carnivore or encounter people who are promoting Meat-Free Monday? I mean, imagine if we had a campaign that says, you know, let's get rid of racism. We won't tell racist jokes one day a week. If people think that that's the morally acceptable thing to do, it will lead to no change whatsoever. And I've been doing this now for 32 years, and I can say quite confidently, Tim, that there has never been a sustained vegan movement where the organizations have promoted the idea that veganism is a moral imperative. Most of the time, if they're talking about the issue at all, they're talking about vegetarianism. And veganism is presented as some sort of Herculean super person, super effort for the people who really care. And the answer is, no, actually, I think veganism is the least you do when you recognize that animals matter morally. You can't eat them, wear them, use them. End of story. And so veganism becomes the moral baseline, and it becomes the least that we can do for animals, not something that we do when we gird our loins and you know, move into the superhuman category of sacrifice and whatnot. And so I think, you know, look at these organizations, Tim. Look at, I mean, you know, they're promoting welfare reform. You know, groups like Animal Aid, groups like Viva, these groups are promoting welfare reform. What message does that send to people except that, quote, higher welfare products, end quote, are morally desirable? And that's exactly the message that gets sent. That's exactly a confused message, and that's a counterproductive message.
Okay. All right. Well, I totally hear you on that, and I think that, you know, that's obviously a very intelligent comment, Gary, and it's one for all of us who are vegan to consider very closely. And I thank you for making that point very clearly. I would say that you, as far as I know, the GLF, you know, you've been promoting the vegan moral baseline for 32 years or a long time, so I'd say there, and you've got plenty of supporters, so I'd say there are people who have been doing that. My question is, though, what do you do when people don't listen to your message? What happens if they reject your Go Vegan message? What happens if they turn around and go, well, thanks, Gary, but not for me, no.
But you know, you don't know what will happen to them next week or in a month, or you know.
What I've been doing for 32 years, and I'm one guy. I don't have an organization. I don't have a charitable organization. I don't solicit or accept donations. I am one person. Look what I've been able to do. Imagine if we had all of the millions and millions, in fact, billions of pounds that if you take the animal movement as a global matter, or just restricted to the United States and Great Britain, we are talking about a huge amount of money. Imagine if we put that into a sustained, unequivocal campaign in which we promoted the idea that it's not Meat-Free Monday, that it's not a question of vegetarianism, it's a question of veganism. Imagine what we could do, Tim. Think about that, what we could do if we spoke with one voice about interspecies justice and said, you can't justify any animal exploitation. If somebody says, look, I hear you, but I'm not ready to go vegan, let them make the choice about what they want to do short of going vegan. We should never be there patting them on the back saying, oh, yeah, cage-free eggs. Good, great, good, good baby step. Yeah, that's a good first step. No, because when you're patting somebody on the back and telling them that cage-free eggs is a good thing, then that's all they're going to do. Then you're going to end up being one of those people that I get emails from every single week that, you know, I've been a vegetarian for 20 years. Until I read your essay, or until I read your book, or until I heard you on a podcast or on Bob Linden, it never occurred to me that veganism was a moral obligation, not an option. What we need to do is educate people. Think of what we could do, Tim. Think of what you
And we have the most compelling arguments, too. Everything is on our site. We don't have to make up anything. It's good. It's all right.
We've been trying it. People don't listen. This is the trouble. Like, it sounds great on paper, but when you say you were the only one.
What's the matter?
There's plenty others. There's been a lot of effort tried and a lot of
We have to take a break. The music didn't come on. I think we have to take a break, so we'll continue. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. And we're talking to Professor Gary Francione and Tim Barford in the UK with the Vegan Society and VegFest UK. And I must say that I learned from Professor Francione that there's no vegan movement. I didn't realize it because I'm in my own vegan bubble doing a vegan radio show and talking about it at environmental events everywhere. And so I realized, well, there aren't a lot of people out there really promoting veganism. And then also I realized that I was doing a commentary on KPFA here. Within 4 minutes, if our arguments are right, people will go vegan. I hear from people who hear a four-minute segment, and they go vegan. I run into people all the time who hear the show, who just hear what it's about, and they go vegan all the time. I would like to suggest that people with the Vegan Society in the UK make plans to come to the World Vegan Summit and Expo in March so we can strategize to see if we're doing this right. What do you think? Let's see. Whose turn is it? Gary, you want to jump in for a second and then Tim?
I mean, look, I think right now the situation at the Vegan Society is very strange because they are not only taking the position that they're not promoting veganism as a moral imperative, but they're basically saying that the way to get people to go vegan is tell them not to go vegan, that basically, you know, tell them you don't have to be vegan as long as you buy products that have the Vegan Society trademark. And so I think we really do need to decide as a movement, is veganism a moral baseline? Is it a moral imperative? If it is, then what we need to do going forward is very different from what we've been doing and what we're doing now. And on the other hand, if people think it's not a moral imperative, it's not a moral baseline, then they should go off and do their thing. But we're building a grassroots movement. And, you know, we're doing it outside of all of the organizations, without any support from the organizations. Indeed, Bob, I think it's interesting. There is not one organization in the United Kingdom or in the United States that carries Eat Like You Care, which is a book advocating unapologetically an unequivocal argument for veganism. Why? Because I am critical of welfare reform and of positions less than veganism. So their position is, okay, fine, then we're not going to promote that position.
Okay. So, Just quickly to jump in here and then let Tim on, I just noticed the latest promotion from the Humane Society of the United States. It's promoting an event called Hoofin' It, H-O-O-F-I-N, Hoofin'
It.
Four nights in Denver of dinner eating hoofed animals, you know, cows, bison, sheep, and pigs, but all humane. Tim, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, Gary, you know, Bob, I'm really, really happy to hear you're doing this event. I think it's essential. I've got a lot of respect for it, and I hope a lot of people from the UK and indeed all around the world will be able to get to your summit. It's going to carry a very, very strong and powerful message. What I would like to say, though, is with respect to both Gary, with respect to myself and VegFest, with respect to the Vegan Society, indeed Viva, Animal Aid, all the people who've been campaigning for a vegan lifestyle for a long, long time. Since we last spoke, indeed, Gary, last week, a big development has been announced. I believe on Monday or Tuesday. Monday, it was announced that some of the world's biggest multi-billionaires are now investing massively into fake meats, plant-based meats, plant-based eggs, plant-based materials. These guys include the likes of Richard Branson, Bill Gates, the guys who started Twitter. These people have massive, massive, massive access to funds. For us, my feeling is, you know what? We've already now made the difference that the little people like the Garys and the Tims and the vegan societies, the people with not a lot but just a good heart and a good spirit and a bit of love in their hearts to try and win through this argument to as many people as possible, it's been picked up. We kind of won it. It's almost like we're almost now like people like us. It's almost like well, let's put it this way. Now the big boys and girls have moved in, we're going to see things change a lot, lot quicker. And we're going
I don't think Richard Branson and Bill Gates are going to change the world in the way we need to see it change.
Okay. Well, I think that's it for this week. Professor Francione, we'll talk to you next week. Tim, thank you for being on again. We appreciate
you.
Your contribution. Okay, thanks again. We have Dr. Lester Friedlander coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. We continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, where you can make a tax-deductible donation to support the program. Click Donate there. And you can also be a part of our World Vegan Summit and Expo. We've been discussing that, and it's coming up in March 2021 and 22 at the Marina Del Rey Marriott. And you'll be able to say hi to the folks from Greenlight Meals. Yes, you have no excuse not to go vegan wherever you are in the country, because you can have delicious vegan meals delivered right to your home or office from Green Light Meals. The website is greenlitemeals.com, and that means breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, smoothies, desserts, all there, all fantastic. You will love what you get from Greenlight Meals. And you also have the opportunity for consultation on weight loss and nutrition with Melissa Bry, who is the in-house consultant. And check it out. Go to the website. It's greenlitemeals.com. And delivered anywhere you are in the USA. If you're lucky enough to be in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, well, you can head right on over to Vegetarian House, one of the best 100% vegan restaurants in the world. I mean, it's really, everybody loves it. And it's at 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose. And Vegetarian House also caters in the Bay Area. So if you have a business function coming up, a social event, a wedding, and you want the food to be fantastic, well, get in touch with Vegetarian House. The website is vegetarianhouse.us. Well, earlier we were talking about the health hazards of chicken in the UK and the Campylobacter that's there. And we have an ongoing, really ongoing threat to public health from filthy foster farms. We've talked to Dr. Lester Friedlander about this in the past. Lester Friedlander, doctor of veterinary medicine, who was a USDA inspector, in fact, trained other USDA inspectors. And today we'd like to follow up with him on the continuing foster farms debacle and also talk a little bit about, you know, your bacon. Did your bacon have diarrhea, because there is this epidemic of diarrhea virus where 40 to 50 million pigs are being killed in the U.S. You know, if you think about all of this, it really is enough to make you go vegan. How are you today, Dr. Friedlander?
Fine, thank you.
Good. I'm so glad to have you here again. And bring us up to date. You know, I been talking about foster farms, and people are still getting sick with the salmonella poisoning. And you have ideas about the reasons behind that, but also there's politics.
Yes. Unfortunately, there's politics involved with that decision not to shut foster farms down. Unfortunate, because the consumers are the ones that are getting sick, and up to date, it's over 500 people throughout the United States have been sick, and it's been associated with the Salmonella Heidenberg bacteria species that they're getting sick from, and the CDC did trace it down to Foster Farms product.
Mm-hmm. And You're not playing the show in the background, are you, by any chance? Or I'm just wondering if there's...
Oh, you should shut it off?
Yeah, please. It's a little distracting.
Okay,
I don't.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I never listen to myself, and that was painful for me. So,
yes.
So so you think foster farms should be shut down, but it's not being shut down. Why?
Well, number one, it's not being shut down because of the relationship with a person that used to be deputy chief of staff for the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack. Her name is Ann McMillan. She left USDA, and she is now associated with the poultry industry, especially here in California. And because of
was the name Karen Ross? Did you say Karen Ross? What was her name?
Ann McMillan. Is the person that left. The other person, Karen Ross, okay, she is now, she also used to work for, she was the chief of staff for the USDA Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, and now she's the California Secretary of Agriculture. So with those two people in mind, Karen Ross, who's now California Secretary of Agriculture, and Ann McMillan, who also used to be at USDA, they're both in California, and their close relationship with foster farms, that's, I think, the main reason that USDA did not go further and shut them down. Now, the problem with foster farms is that it's an integrated system. In other words, foster farms owns everything, right from the baby chicks up to the broilers that they're raising, up to the processing plant. Now, what happened was FSIS went to the one processing plant of Foster Farms and inspected it and found three cockroaches. They shut Foster Farms down for several hours, and so they told Foster Farms to sanitize everything. And then they let him start up again. But three cockroaches in no way is responsible for over 500 people getting sick from Salmonella Heidenberg.
They're blaming three cockroaches for the Salmonella outbreak?
Well, that's indirectly what FSIS is saying. They went to inspect the processing plant And while they're inspected, they found three cockroaches. So they shut them down for a couple of hours and told Foster Farms to sterilize everything. Then they let them start up again. But in no way is three cockroaches going to be responsible for over 500 people throughout the country getting sick from eating Foster Farms chickens that are contaminated with the Salmonella Heidenberg.
Right. Salmonella doesn't come from cockroaches, right? It comes from fecal matter.
Yeah, it comes from fecal matter, but, you know, the cockroaches can transmit it through their feet if they walk through the fecal matter, but three cockroaches at a processing plant is no way going to be responsible for over 500 people getting sick. The problem, from my experience, because I was raised on a chicken farm when I grew up, is right there at the poultry farm itself where they're being raised. It doesn't seem like Foster Farms has any kind of maintenance schedule cleaning out the manure and urine in those farms that they have set up. So in other words, the chickens are, their feathers and feet are being contaminated with the feces and urine. Then they're going to the processing plant where this caused contamination.
And they're contaminated, right, as babies. Baby chicks are contaminated, right? I mean,
sure. When they're baby chicks, and then they go older into broilers, you know, then they go to the processing plant. But the contamination starts right there at the poultry house where these birds are being raised. That's where the problem is.
It sounds like it can never be corrected. It sounds like you're saying it can never be corrected.
Well, it can be corrected if Foster Farms, because they're integrated, they own the baby chicks and the broilers. It could be corrected if they followed sanitary procedures and cleaned up those poultry coops on a timely basis. And it doesn't seem like they're doing that.
So that's it. Their Foster Farms is filthy. They don't clean the place. I wanted to clarify a little bit, though, what the politics behind it. And you mentioned two women earlier, and someone was, you know, worked for the Congress member from Foster Farms district, I believe, and Governor Brown. Tell us again why what the political connections are with these people
are. It was told to me that. One of the ladies, I'm not sure if it was Karen Ross or Ann McMillan, used to work for a congressperson that represents the district where the Foster Farms is located. Then they went to Washington, D.C. and worked for the USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. One was the chief of staff, that was Karen Ross, and the other one, Ann McMillan, was also working there as an assistant to the Secretary of Agriculture. Then Karen Ross was just appointed by your governor as the Secretary of Agriculture, so she went back to California. And now Ann McMillan left USDA, and she's working for the poultry industry there in California.
We don't get a USDA shutdown. We don't get a USDA shutdown because filthy Foster Farms infiltrates the USDA, infiltrates the California Department of Agriculture. It's a pretty wild scene. I wanted to switch subjects, though, if we may. We might have a couple of minutes here and then a few more minutes after the break. But people may not know that, you know, their bacon has had diarrhea, that there's this, porcine endemic diarrhea virus that's huge.
Right.
I mean, it's, what is it, in 30, 35 states?
Yes. It's PEDV, porcine endemic diarrhea virus. It's a virus, so it's airborne. It's infecting over 30 states in the United States now have this virus. It affects pigs as young as 20 months or younger. And CDC tracked it down, and they said the virus originated from China. Now, my question is, when they imported pigs from China, were they ever quarantined? I mean, if they were quarantined, they would see those pigs have this virus and were dying, and that would send up, you know, a red flag, and that didn't happen. And the other question I had also is that it's a virus, so it's airborne. And what are these pig farmers doing with all these pigs? Some reports say that they're to cut down on costs instead of sending them to rendering to get them boiled up. They're actually digging holes there on the farm and burying these pigs. And it's a virus. It's airborne.
We have to take a break right now. We'll continue with Dr. Lester Friedlander on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. If you'd like to support the program, you can click donate at goveganradio.com. Also, register for the great event coming up. It's worldvegansummit.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. And we're looking forward to the World Vegan Summit and Expo coming in March, WorldVeganSummit.com. Thanks for support from so many people helping us to get the venue. Nature's Flavors, great company. We'll be drinking their Select Coffee and Tea. You know that brand, S-E-E-L-E-C-T. We'll be drinking organic Select Coffee and Tea there. Why not stop by Viva La Vegan Grocery and pick up some of the Select products? Well, Birdie and Bill's Natural Sodas, also baking mixes, including vegan, gluten-free, and sugar-free, available at Viva La Vegan Grocery, Rancho Cucamonga, and Santa Monica, and also Sentient Lifestyle, helping us make the summit happen, sentientlifestyle.com. We're talking to Dr. Lester Friedlander, doctor of veterinary medicine, former USDA inspector, whistleblower. He trained inspectors at the USDA. And you may not know it, but, you know, there's this this virus going around, the porcine endemic diarrhea virus. So, yes, your bacon or pork probably had diarrhea. 40 to 50 million pigs are dying in 35 states. Dr. Friedlander, I understand that the way that pigs are immunized is that they're fed diarrhea and other pigs. Could that be?
Well, the whole thing about this factory farming business is just getting out of hand. I mean, when you're talking about millions of animals that are all housed under these conditions, and then also the overuse of antibiotics. One thing I want to also stress is that Cargill, in the Minneapolis paper, they're located, their corporate office in Minneapolis, said that they're going to phase out the growth-promoting drugs in its turkeys and poultry business, okay? And then on the same article, they said actually that Cargill will still use antibiotics for illness treatment in turkeys and for disease prevention. So in one paragraph, they say they're going to cut it out, and the next paragraph, they're still going to use it for disease prevention.
They're not going to use antibiotics for growth. They're going to use them for disease prevention. So nothing changes except the wording.
Except the language. So that they must think the consumers, you know, are a bunch of morons. I mean, you know,
well,
they said they're going to phase it out, but by the same token, they're still going to use it for disease prevention. And then
amazing. The
other thing I want to bring to your attention real quick is that the CEO for Buffalo Wild Wings, her name is Sally J. Smith, and their corporate office is in Wayzata, Minnesota, which is a suburb of Minneapolis, okay? In an interview, she said how happy her company is that the chicken wings are a lot bigger than in the past. and her customers are really happy that they're getting more meat on the chicken wings. Oh, that's because of the antibiotics that's been given to them. It promotes the growth.
Right. So they're bragging about bigger chicken wings because of antibiotics, and people will suffer super bugs and all sorts of ramifications then, I'm sure. So it's pretty crazy. So the pigs die from this virus, though? They die from it?
Yes.
Or the yes? It's a
yes,
fatal...
They're dying from it. And like I said, it's over 30 states are affected with this virus. And my concern is, as an environmentalist also, is what are they doing with these dead pigs? And because it costs so much to have them rendered, okay, they're actually digging holes and burying them right there at the farms. And it's a virus. So, you know, somebody's got to get control of the situation.
So it will continue to pass the virus on to others. Thanks for being with us today again, Dr. Friedlander. We look forward to having you on again in the future. So it's pretty crazy. This virus is killing the pigs. And the ones who survive, you know, got the immunity from eating the diarrhea and dead pigs. How yummy bacon is, isn't it? Go vegan!